Kick off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
Hi there, Corinne. How
hey,
are you?
Good morning, Mikey.
To repeat Jules' question he just asked you, how was the Writers' Festival?
Auckland Writers' Festival, it was such a blast. I feel like I'm still recovering. Sort of had Writers' Festival hangover for about a week.
What is the high like? What's the Writers' Festival high like?
I'm still on it.
Still going, man. What's it like when you realize, oh my God, I'm right in it.
Right in it, you know, five or six sessions a day. So quite intense.
A session for those people who've never been to a writer's session before.
So yeah, the Auckland Writers Festival saw national and international authors at the Aotea Centre in session with people interviewing them about their work their craft. And it was pretty Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sort of five sessions a day kind of thing, and just lots of great ideas and thinking and books and words, and just a really great celebratory event.
Now I'm gonna throw this one into the mix. I read a few things saying, look, no more questions from the audience.
Yeah. I was one of those people that tweeted that.
Maybe yours are red, maybe. Who knows? But
it's such a downer, you know, when someone wants a little platform for their monologue. Oh, I'm working on my book that I've been, you know, like, what do you think of this? And it's not a question. And it kind of brings the momentum down a bit. And I just think it was such a bummer. And also, I also kind of think too, and this might be a bit contentious, people might not agree, but I sort of think if you're in the audience and you've got a question, you don't really need an audience for your question. You can just get up in the signing queue and sort of do a one-on-one, quickly ask the writer while you're in the line, getting your book signed.
Yeah, I asked that because I did the Richard Dawkins shows. It was pretty full on, and actually really the audience questions there, we did like I think we had 35-40 minutes of audience questions.
That's a lot.
Yeah and they were all really really good.
Oh, well, that's
bar one in each town. There was one there's just a freaky weird one up here that was sort of just not that good. And there were two up here. Someone mentioned the South Park episode he's in.
he might attract some of those, eh?
He wasn't that cool about that. But he attracts really, like, you know, some phenomenal people, obviously, enjoy what he does, you know, and follow what he does.
Yeah.
And there was a Christian guy down in Christchurch who I had to give them the move on, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's good that you can do that, though. Good that you
noticed. I was thinking the Neil deGrasse Tyson one's really good. Brian Greene one, I've been to, really good. So, but I guess writers are different because they're, it's not so much, it's not talking about facts and
although there can I don't know. I mean, sometimes, you know, I think in a lot of young adult sessions, when kids ask questions, you know, that's really important.
One of the kids' questions, Richard Dawkins, was the most weirdest bit, deepest, trippiest one of the lot.
And that I would encourage, you know, but just sometimes people need to rein it in and think about, do I really need to get up and waste people's time by asking a question that's not actually a question, it's a statement or a monologue.
Yeah.
It just kind of shifts the tone a bit. Yeah. I had to walk out.
And don't forget whose show it is, hey? You know, that's the thing.
That's right. Yeah, that's
right.
You
had to walk out.
I had to walk out of one of the Q&A sessions for Alex Ross, actually, who I'm going to talk about today.
Okay, well, let's talk about his book.
Oh, so
even though you walked out on it? Is that what you feel bad, so you want to talk about it on the radio today?
I loved his session, but I just walked out probably the last question in the Q&A moment from the audience, not his session.
Well, but before we get on to that, let's round it up again with the Writers' Festival. So it was a great success.
It was a great success. Apparently tickets, you know, were
books,
up.
Books still pretty popular with people. Books
are hot, yeah. It was a sea of punters, you know, with their elbows out and kind of rushing to these sessions.
Because, I mean, a lot of the artists, the writers that they get to meet, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity,
isn't it?
That's
right,
If you're a big fan, then that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's a great thing. So I saw two sessions with Alex Ross, and this is the guy who has written this book called Listen to This.
And you talked about him coming. I think you preempted about him. Is this the
It was Jenna, yeah.
It was Jenna, was it? Yeah.
So he is a music critic for The New Yorker, and he actually got that job when he was 28 in 1998, and he's still there. And he's such a great writer about music. I really love him. He sort of communicates real enthusiasm and passion for music, and he writes mainly about classical music, Wow. But kind of from opera to avant-garde, but also pop music. So he's a really deep thinker, a close listener, and a thoughtful writer. And he really appeals to me, actually, because I really love experimental music. And reading someone like Alex Ross is really an accessible entry point for me to kind of explore something like minimal 20th century classical composers, yeah. You know, like that were quite experimental.
That can be quite the whole idea of examining the genre that you wouldn't normally go near can be quite quite intimidating, sort of.
Yeah, totally. And and this, he kind of looks at musical culture, and he kind of writes about important figures in classical music, but ties them together with pop music.
Yeah.
So one minute you're reading about Mozart, and then the next minute he's writing about Radiohead, Bjork, Peru Boo, and Butthole Surfers.
I still think the Butthole Surfers have really got, when they chose that name, you know, and they're still going, and people talk about them all the time, and in that reverential way. It's so great they're called the Butthole Surfers.
So great, such a great
I've got a great t-shirt at home, the Butthole Surfers, a clown pulling the finger, it's just such
I know
great
that
shirt.
T-shirt, you yeah. should wear it. Wear it next week.
Okay.
So this is about crossing the border between classical and pop music, and he does it so beautifully. It's such a pleasure to read, really hooky, enthusiastic, engaging, unpretentious. Completely unpretentious. He's got this amazing knack of appealing to an expert, but also, you know, someone like me.
Come on now.
A beginner.
Come on now.
And each chapter.
You recommend some pretty good books for a beginner.
Cool.
No,
but each chapter is. Oh, there's one chapter actually that's really great about how recorded music changed musical performance and standardized it in a way.
Really?
Which is so interesting, you know, it kind of changed audiences' expectations.
I love reading about the chronological growth of music. It's amazing.
He writes so much about that in here, and he writes about this, and one thing I love that he writes about in this book is how the development of people's music taste, he says his was backward. So for him, he listened to classical music, only classical music, up until he was 20. And then after that, he discovered post-punk and noise rock.
Woohoo!
And
great days.
For me, it was the other way around, you know. Yep. I kind of got into that stuff first. And from that, have kind of moved into, you know, interesting kind of experimental classical music. And
I wonder if one day, I can't see it, but one day maybe I'm just going to listen to classical music. Who knows that? But then I don't know if I. I'm thinking too far ahead.
Live
for the day. Carpe diem, man.
It's the perfect book, really, to kind of cross musical boundaries. And yeah, I mean, he's got a little thing in here too, that it's a link, and if you want to listen to some of the music that he's writing about, you can go to the link and it has examples. So that's a really cool kind of engaging approach. Yeah.
And he still writes today for who?
He still writes today for The New Yorker. This book here, listen to this, I think is about 10 years old, but this is updated with a new chapter, so it's a brand new edition.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And actually, he wrote a great essay in 1996 called Nothing's Gonna Happen, and he's super into New Zealand rock music. And that essay he wrote is about New Zealand underground rock.
I feel like I've read that before, read that somewhere.
Yeah, you might have. It sort of, you know, re-emerges every now and then. And he wrote about great groups like The Clean and This Kind of Punishment, and kind of maybe some of the darker New Zealand kind of groups that don't even get that much attention here, maybe, like maybe in our weird little orbit.
Well, even back then, it was, because 1996, that's still when, you know, you read something like that because you read it somewhere. Like it was published somewhere, not
that's right.
Just dial it up, you know.
Yeah, so totally.
And so for that, so even for him to have that much information and knowledge about New Zealand music, he must have been really genuinely following it from hunting it down, sort of, and having a good hard listen, because that's where the. I suppose it was around about then, though, wasn't we? Flying Nun, that went really international, like really international.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like in the States, but he had a college rock music station there, and he played a lot of New Zealand music, and he had friends that got him into bands like Pere Ubu and Sonic Youth. And so, you know, that's kind of the logical kind of transition. He was sort of listening to... But he, in his session at the Writers' Festival, he talked about how, you know, all you had back then, he'd have like an LP with a kind of arbitrary, blurry photo of the band and no kind of context. He was like, wow, what's this exotic music from New Zealand?
Great, that's great. That's really great, though, having
and
that.
And it made him kind of find out more, so...
That's why I don't watch music videos, because I find music videos really destroy things for me sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are just a bunch of knobs.
And I was actually just thinking, you know, I would love Alex Ross to make me a mixtape. It would be the best mixtape, I reckon.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. It'd be 3 hours long, wouldn't it?
With liner notes each track.
Yeah.
I want that. That would be my dream.
And the reasoning why one goes into the other and then into the other.
Yeah. So that...
Problems with mixtapes, you can put way too much thought into it.
Yeah.
I get
painstaking.
Angry. I'll sit there and be telling myself off about dropping something into one iTunes playlist because the playlist is called a certain thing. I don't know if it...
doesn't
fit. Like, really, man? Really? Just put it
in. Just chuck it in.
I need to give them the numbers like playlist A32 or stuff like that now.
Yeah.
Depersonalize it.
Takes the fun out.
The last time someone made me a playlist, they put like 16-minute instrumentals on it. So
ungrateful. What an ungrateful.
But it's just like not every single track can be like 20 minutes long. We get it. You like music.
That they carefully constructed for you.
Was that someone carefully constructed? It was like fucking 30 tracks.
Was that someone courting you?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And the long game. That's called the long game.
End up.
It ended.
Halfway through the first track. Good on you. All right, so listen, this is the name of the book by Alex Ross.
Yep, listen to this
Ross. Good looking paperback too, I might add.
$28. And the song that I picked.
Did you? What do you got for us?
We just talked about that essay that he called Nothing's Gonna Happen, about New Zealand underground rock. And of course that takes its name from the great Tall Dwarf song.
The Mighty Tall Dwarfs. Funny way of describing the Tall Dwarfs, isn't it? The Mighty Tall Dwarfs.
What's the track called?
Nothing's Going to Happen.
Ironic, isn't it? As we stand here doing so, they're doing nothing. 9:22. So listen, this way, Alex Ross is available now. On paperback and hardcover. No, paperback.
Just paperback.
Get over yourself. Paperback. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
I'm glad you enjoyed the Writers' Festival.
Oh, I loved it. Yep. Bloody tuck it out.
Tuck it on out. I'm tucked. Maybe all the ants in the world will sip sweetly at the trough of tea and almost say one word for anything but what they've learned from all the young coats. Race horses laugh so hopeful, stiff bricks in the general direction. I'm anywhere but home. Nothing's gonna happen. Maybe all the children in small rooms will fall silent at a wall, a window, and forget to breathe for just 1 minute because of some beauty that has not been altered. Damn, or pointed out by the clumsy dark oafs who train them. Nothing's gonna happen. 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 Then again, all the time, every minute, never ending, unrelenting, all around us, without pausing, endless, endless, all pervading, moving motion, this way, that way, that way, our way, tick tock, free fall, love, love, kiss, kiss, make, do, be, is,
was I, me, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. I think nothing's gonna happen. Maybe all the children in small rooms will go silent in a wall or window and begin to breathe for just 1 minute because of some beauty that has not been altered and or pointed out. Then a clumsy dog won't train them.
There is some good news, isn't there, to our report?
There's some great news. So B card holders get a 10% discount at Time Out.
Holy hell!
Holy
so
moly.
Once again, B card holders get a 10% discount at Time Out Bookstore.
So it's a good incentive to come see us in the village.
And read.
The village.
Read the village discount, B card, Time Out Books.
That was Loose Reads.